This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Tell us a bit about how the show was conceived.
Well, you know, everybody asks us this question, it's like there must be something in the archives, but I think both Tina and I were both kind of on the same wavelength about thinking about young people, about particularly dealing with relationships in New York City and in post 9/11 environment. Idea was to really do a realistic look at the lives of teenagers and their families, struggling with identity and with relationships in the modern world.
It's what I really enjoy about the show, actually, is that the fact that the main characters, they're teenagers, and you're showing their experiences that aren't kind of in this issues of the week or very special episode kind of way. How do you keep the show in that kind of reality?
It's satisfying to hear that you get that, because we really never wanted to do anything that was like issue centered. You know, I think we focus on the characters. We focus on the fact that they're in process. And, you know, when you deal with that time of life, it is so inherently dramatic. It's so inherently filled with conflict and, you know, self-discovery and self-doubt, that in a way, if you throw these people in a room together or in a situation together, you're going to get so much material. That we were definitely careful not to ever pull things from the paper or, you know, have to rely on what was current. I think if you're doing something truthfully, okay, you're going to touch upon those things anyway. I mean, I think, a lot of people found the show accessible because it is basically about human relationships and of all ages, really.
The show is very clearly set in New York, and so much so that it's recognisable in the feel of the show, even to an international audience. What role does the city take in the show's flavour, if you will?
I love to think of New York as another character. I think it really is very much a part of the show. That does not, in fact, distance people, because I think the more specific you are in your storytelling, the more actually you can engage people. You don't want to be generic. And so we put these kids and what they go through in a city that really lends itself to storytelling. And there's so many diverse types of people and so many diverse situations that we can call upon here. And we have a lot of, international fans. So whether that's because they're interested in New York or whether, it's just so universal what we're talking about in some ways.
I mean, you mention a lot the after 9/11 effect, and obviously we see, the worldwide effects, but can you talk about how the show explores the after effects for New York and particularly the characters?
Right. First, initially, and by the way, this has changed over time. I mean, initially that was highlighted a bit more, and because Vivian, the main character, her father was a firefighter and the first responder. So of course that's that's part of it. But I think what the show reflects is that our world is larger. Like you just said, what happened here, what happens elsewhere that we don't, for example, in this country, in the United States, that we don't often feel, is now, especially through social media, through the internet, through the way news is shared, we put these characters in a larger world. It isn't just, you know, the halls of a high school. You know, it isn't just the corner, you know, soda shop. It's wanted to show that you know, whatever happens in the world, we are affected by it, and we affect, in return, we affect other people.
When Anyone But Me actually started, it was probably one of the more famous examples of a web TV series. What do you see as the advantage of the format as opposed to television?
I don't know that there's an advantage. Here's what I believe. I think every form of art and media has its place and that there's room for all of it. And in fact, we sort of work off of one another, too, and sometimes use techniques or ways of communicating from other genres. I think the glorious thing about the web that is how many people you reach. And in terms of if it has any advantage at all, it's the fact that we own our own work and that there isn't, it's not stalled or held up by some committee that's deciding, is this going to be, you know, we want more rewrites or this isn't going to fly with the sponsors or, you know, you have to go through a network, a studio, producers, you know, in traditional media and television. Mm-hmm. And we, you know, we've been free to be our own critics. You know, of course, we, you know, we want to put something out there that's worthy. But, you know, we get to listen to ourselves and do it ourselves.
It's interesting to me. I read that you also wrote on the L Word at one point, and what I kind of find really interesting is when there's a lesbian show, and we're kind of seeing that now with Lip Service in the UK, where the lesbian community has all of their opinions about what the characters are and whether they're representative, and they want a clear exam. You know, they want to see exactly like them. What has the response of the lesbian community been to Anyone But Me?
Extraordinary, extraordinarily positive. I mean, what's fun to see, what's rewarding is the passion. You know, we cast young unknowns and people got to embrace them as their own. I don't think we've had, of course, we don't read all of the comments. We do certainly try to write back to people and engage with people. I don't think we've had the same flack that, let's say, the L Word got when I was on the show and writing for it, that, like, for example, okay, there aren't enough butches or, you know, or that person, Sam, or, you know, this sort of, like you said, needing to be represented. I think how we represent people is in the human struggle of being young, identifying as gay or questioning. Those things seem to hit home with people. So we haven't really had much in the way of people saying, you're not representing us, but rather, in fact, you know, some people saying, I wish there was a show like this when I was young, or, you know, people writing us to say, you've given us the courage to come out, or I want a relationship just like those two have, you know, which is really nice to hear. Or them getting, you know, angry at one like Vivian or Aster or Sophie and saying, you know, we had people align with teams when there was a time in the series that Aster and Vivian broke up, for example.
Yeah. you're now 3 years into the show and you've recently ended the series. How do you feel the show changed over the course of those 3 seasons?
Well, it definitely, it deepened, and I think the characters grew, you know, partly because of our wonderful cast as well. I mean, I think you could see the characters deepen, and also, you know, Tina and I, we like taking risks as the creators, the writers of the show, you know, in terms of the style or the, you know, playing with time, which we did in season 3, and also in season 2, actually, the very first episode of that season, where it was a kind of fantasy episode. And I think by the time you come to the series finale, the characters have really, they have grown from 16 to 17. You can see the, you know, their maturity. And the actors are so present in those roles. They got so invested in them and so connected to them.
Given that you're so visible, you know, online, and did you ever find that it was challenging to not sort of take on all of the stuff that was coming out to you from other people, like from fans of the show, like, oh, we want this to happen? Or...
Right. Well, challenging in some ways. I know the first season, what a lot of people wanted were, why aren't these episodes longer? And I think that's also because they didn't understand the web, yeah, or took for granted that because they were seeing the show for free, somehow it just came to them that way. Like, it was done. Like, they didn't realize that it cost money to make it, and, you know, it would cost money to make it longer as well. It was hard sometimes to see negative comments, which is why, you know, you have to be, you want to engage with people who take the show, who are involved enough with the show that their criticisms aren't just, you know, let's say hate comments, or, mm-hmm, you know, I don't like that character, she's not pretty enough, or he's too whatever. Mm-hmm. You know, because of course those things are difficult. Or, well, I think what you just said, like, people saying, I want to see these two together, or I think those two have more chemistry, or we never, never wrote our episodes taking those comments into consideration. We just tried to just enjoy the, you know, the conversations,
yeah,
that were going. I mean, listen, there were people who didn't get the fantasy episode we did called The Real Thing, which was the season opener of season 2. It was clear to us and to most people, but there are people who just didn't get it. And also people, a very, very small minority, but still, who were disappointed with the series finale because it left some things not tied up, you know, left it open. And you know, it's hard to say to people, well, yeah, because this isn't the end of their lives, and we wanted to, you know, we didn't want to end things neatly.
The show has now come to an end. What do you see as the lasting influence of the show?
Wow. Well, I'm still talking to you, so I think we've gotten, I'm telling you, Jade, so such amazing response from all over the world, and from within the web community per se, you know, people who are making web series. There's been, I think, an opening, a widening door for series that have gay characters, for example, or deal in some way, whether it's comic, ironic, or dramatic with lesbian, gay characters, stories. And I think, you know, just the fact that we took the chance to do it, that we felt we had an audience, not just in the niche audience of the gay, lesbian community, but much larger than that. So, you know, it remains to be seen how much of a mark we will make. But I feel even at this point that if people do acknowledge our place in this new world, and it's very, very gratifying and moving, I'll tell you.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.